Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And this evening, I hope you have your paper and pencil handy. We'll be dealing with contracts, your rights, and the law. How do we get set up on contract? What do we file into the court? How do we enforce our position in law? What rights do we have? These are just a few of the questions that we're going to deal with here this evening, because I've been getting a lot of phone calls. And I keep trying to get the Moors to understand how this system is set up inside the United States and how to best use this system in commerce to free yourself and accomplish what you have to do in commerce. That doesn't have anything to do with your nationality. When it comes to that, you want to deal with that from a national standpoint. Nationality, national, national, nationality, you understand. Your government. But we have a lot of people who seem to think that I have to force Rome to recognize me as a Moor, and that makes all the difference. Everything ought to change. If I'm a Moor, you got to do this because I'm a Moor, and because all these years you had me classified as Negro colors and blacks. And, okay, now that'd be great. That really would be great if we could do this as a nation. Therefore, we have what's called the Moorish American Government. You want to register with the Moorish American Government by going to www.moorishamericangov.org. Okay, you get that over there set. You get your teachings from the Moorish American Government by dialing into the number that's provided you for you right there. You dial into the conference call 7 days a week, and soon they'll be back up on the radio broadcast. However, when it comes to the United States of America, it operates on a continuous series of contracts called contract law. Okay. If that's how the country operates, and that's how they got me tagged, we just look at myself, for instance. Okay. Have birth certificate, born on this land. Denationalize at birth. It clearly says it right there on my birth certificate. Parents, Negro, color. Okay. All right, so that's denationalization. That's a lawsuit in itself. But we don't even want to go there. No, we're just going to say that's how they got it classified. Then there is a title on the birth certificate. There is a name on the birth certificate. And I use the word name because this is It's something that most of us are familiar with, innate. But what we do is we don't get into things that we see every day. We feel like, okay, I see that, you know, we've defined what that is, so there's no need for me to get into any intricate details about what that is or try to do any type of investigation on what that is to determine whether or not there's something that we may have overlooked. We don't do that. We just assume that if I walk in the house and cut the light on, and the light should come on, and if I cut it off, it should go off. There's no need for an investigation or anything. But what I would like to suggest to you, I think some things need to be investigated and to turn over. And the reason why you want to do that is because you can be most effective with what you know. If you have a contract and you're dealing with a contract, you can be most effective with your contract based on the fact that you are fully able to define all of the details of the very contract that you have. We're going to say that, and this is what I try to recommend for all Moors to do. We want you to file a will, put a will on record. Get your will done, get your common law will done. And in the administrative portion of your will, between the second and third paragraph, we want you to add the administrative portion of your will. Now, in the will itself, on the will itself, between the second and third paragraph, what we want to put on there is administrative portion of this will. See Exhibit A1, estate letter. Exhibit A2, Declaration of Human Rights, which is connected to the letter, Notice of Understanding and Intending Claim of Right. See Exhibit A3, the Rights of Indigenous People. See Exhibit A4. Judicial Notice and Proclamation of Status. Now, it is at this point here that we're going to put on the record and file into the court record as a deed the fact that we have a nationality. It is at that point what our title is and all that stuff. We'll put that right in there. Okay. And the reason I'm telling you this is because most of us don't have a will on file. And the courts and the people inside the court, these are administrative officers. And if you allow them, they will occupy your office. But if you are currently occupying your own office, you have a will on file, you can take the administrative portion or the entire will and assign it to whatever court case you got. But the most important thing that we have to understand is whatever documents we have, these are the documents that we are familiar with, and that we have the power and knowledge to enforce because we have studied the documents. We can, you know, if anybody comes to you and say, well, I see you have an estate letter here. Yeah, let me tell you all about that. Well, I see you have the Declaration of Human Rights. Well, let me give you a breakdown on that. I see you have the Rights of Indigenous People. Let me give you a breakdown on that. Well, what is this Judicial Notice and Proclamation of Status? Well, let me give you a breakdown on that. We don't want to depend on any documentation to do anything. That's just a preliminary for when we come to explain and enforce whatever is in there. You see, we want to get out of the habit of thinking that if I do a document, then you're supposed to do something. No. Even if that is true, why don't we go and learn everything about it so that we can explain it? And if we're their question, we certainly can explain it because we the one created it. We know what's in it and all about it. If we can adopt that habit, then I think that we will make a whole lot of progress inside the United States of America Corporation. If you have set up your estate, you got your estate letter. The estate letter comes with a manual. Okay. So what I would do, if I were you, I would study everything that that manual has to offer in regards to that estate letter. So I will know that inside out. I can recite it. I can tell it like it is in regard to that. And then I can actually use it to its maximum potential. I can use that. I have Exhibit A4, Affidavit of Identity. Let's define that. Let's take Black's Law Dictionary and do some definitions of the things that we are claiming that we are filing into the records inside these courts.
Okay. Well, what's the solution to the mortgage fraud? It's very, very simple. There's documentation whereby you can cancel a mortgage and property taxes at the same time. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. If you are not in foreclosure, however, you have been served with some notices about your mortgage, being late, if you just don't have the money, cancel the contract. It's real, real simple. Along with your Get Rid of the Mortgage package, we'll also give you Tahaka's Archives. That way you cannot go wrong. Feel free to contact me, Tahaka Montreal Bay, area code 904-303-9061. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, Morris.
Okay, I'm back. Now, I want to say that tomorrow we'll be dealing with urban geoponics. We have Brother Diallo Secure who will be with us on the broadcast. Tonight we're offering our free articles as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, the Commerce Game, How to Play, Secrets of America, and other documents. The way to access that is simply send me an email, say, Tom, send me those articles you mentioned on your broadcast. Send that to tarhaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush those to you as attachments in your email. Don't forget, mark your calendar. In January, we will be hosting the Morris Summit right here in Jacksonville, the third summit. I need y'all to get down here, man, so y'all can have some of this good Southern hospitality. We look forward to having you down here for the summit, and I look forward to having you over here to the house so we get a chance to meet each other for the first time, okay? All right. Now, I want to go back to what I was talking about in the beginning. We're talking about, at this point, we're talking about actually how do we get set up on contract. And one of the first things that you want to do is you want to go ahead and start doing your estate. You do your estate letter. You want to set up your estate. You want to do your will. Get that file on the record. All right. Now, once you get that down on the record, the court is as it is, by the way. And let me say this, because we got sometimes you may have some little hard knot county there. They might say, well, you're not a lawyer, so you can't file a will. You got to go get a lawyer. And no. What we need is we don't need a lawyer. You know, I'm not a chump. I don't need to go get one. So why don't I and do you have a miscellaneous filing? Where's the federal courthouse so I get this done and get it on the record? And so you can get it in there and file that on the record. Now, once we get that on the record, now, what we're going to do now, because we have evidence that we have this thing on the record, it is up to the court to make sure that our will is carried out. So what we have to do is understand their position. What is it that the court is bound by their rules and regulations that they have to follow? And we need to know that, so when they violate their own rules and regulations, that makes them liable, and now we can enforce the liability. So not only do we want to understand our position, but we want to understand their positions too. What is it that they are supposed to do by law that they are not doing? And if they are not doing this, what is it that we can do to make a difference? What we can, and we're not talking about being combative or by argumentative, and we don't want to do any of that. And we're going to cover that here this evening. We don't need to do all of that. We don't want to appear to be combative. We don't want to do that. We only want to lay out the facts. I mean, we can ask questions. We can write down a list of items to ask, because if somebody has brought me into the courtroom and they say that I'm liable for something, or I did something wrong, can we please get some clarity on exactly what it is that I did wrong? If you got a prosecutor that's prepared to prosecute me, does he have the license to prosecute in the state of Florida? And can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest? Of course I can. So let's try to see, if there's no conflict of interest, then I should be able to get a fair trial. So there are certain questions that need to be asked to make sure that there is preparation in order for me to get a fair trial in the first place. Okay. And this goes on toward the driver's license and the whole setup. So what we're going to do here this evening is we want to get to a complete and total understanding of what can and what can't be done, and at the same time, what we can do about it based on what we know and what we have studied and what we are prepared to enforce based on what we know. I think that's fair. Now, if there's anybody out there that don't think that's fair, just, you know, give me a call and let me know. If you don't think that's fair, let me know. Okay? Now, so what I'm going to do now is, shortly before I do that, what I want you to do is, for those of you who are on your social sites, if you send me a friend request, if you're on Facebook, send me a friend request to Taaka Amana El Bay. I'll grant that to give you access to my wall and my shows and what have you. And send that TAHAKA53@hotmail.com. And that'll give you access to my wall, okay?
Good evening. I'm Todd Foster, reporting for Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. This evening, we're going to be discussing the issue of driver's license requirement here in the United States. What is a driver's license? Do you need a driver's license? Is there any law requiring you to have a driver's license? A driver's license is required for one who is conducting commerce on the highways. Now, if you're doing personal travel along the highways or personal transportation, there's no law saying that you need a driver's license. And I'd like to read to you something here from Bouvier's Law Dictionary. One employed in conducting a coach, carriage, wagon, or other vehicle with horses, mules, or other animals. Now, that is Bouvier's definition of a driver. There's no mention about personal transportation in there or anything. Now, notice under part three of that definition, it states that the driver must be of good habits for the journey and possess good skills. Because if he's not, and there's an accident or an injury, the driver and his employers, yes, that's right, I said employers, are responsible. Now, while the definition of driver does change a little bit over the years, there is a U.S. Supreme Court case, Reno versus Condon, which states, the activity licensed by state DMVs and in connection with which individuals must submit personal information to the DMV, the operations of motor vehicles is itself intricately related to interstate commerce. Now, that was decided January 12, 2000. Now, that is specifically what I'm getting at here, folks. There is no need to have a driver's license for personal transportation. There's no need to have a driver's license to operate your vehicle, to go down to the store to get some milk, to go to the bank, to take your kids to school, to go to work every day. There's no requirement. There's no law. It's all done under the color of law. It's all implied that this is the legal way to do things. Now, understand that there is a difference between lawful and legal. Two totally different things. Now, understand another very important issue. The DMV is a corporation doing business as the DMV. What they have done is implemented such methods as a driver's license, vehicle registration, and so on, to extort money from the people under color of law. And it's quite simple. These methods guarantee profits for the DMV. Why? Because the DMV is a corporation. These are very important things to understand. There is no law obligating you to do these things. Personal travel is a constitutionally guaranteed right. Freedom of movement, mobility, or the right to travel are human rights. Understand that. Human rights, not government-given or government-granted rights, not corporate-granted rights. They are human rights constitutionally guaranteed to you. Now, contrary to what the system tells you, travel is not a privilege. Operating your vehicle is not a privilege. However, if you are a driver using your vehicle for commerce, then you're required to have a driver's license. If you're using your vehicle to make a profit or for hire on the highways, then you are required to have a driver's license. Now, I'd like to show you a document. This is out of Michigan. This is a document that shows a constitutional driver's license and what it consists of. Now, if you'd like to read more about this in detail, you can go to the website listed on the screen. Now, understand a very, very important factor here is that drivers are not required to be licensed. Now, understand that. If you're a driver or operating your vehicle for personal use, you're not required to have a license unless you're employed or doing commerce. Licensing cannot be required of a free people. In order to have a driver's license, it requires the surrender of a right in order to comply with the restrictions of the driver's license. Does that sound like a free people? Doesn't sound like free to me. Now, I'd like to read you something from State versus Spokane. The right of the citizen to travel upon the highway and to transport his property thereon in the ordinary course of life and business differs radically and obviously from that of one who makes the highway his place of business for private gain in the running of a stagecoach or omnibus. Now, understand that the term driver is a contradistinction to the term traveler. It is very important to understand these terms. A driver is one who is employed in conducting a vehicle. A traveler is one who is on a journey of a personal nature. The system has conveniently segued these things into requiring automobile insurance in order to guarantee profits for the insurance companies. It's very simple. What they have done is required the following. If your vehicle is completely paid off, you still are required to have minimum insurance. No one owns the vehicle but you. It's completely paid off. Even if your vehicle is financed, you're required to have full coverage. Full coverage. Why? You're just transporting yourself for personal reasons. It's convenient for those with a vested interest. But I digress, my friends. That is a whole nother story. Let's take our country back and take back our God-given rights to live in true freedom, liberty, and justice for all. I'm Todd Foster reporting for Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. See you next time.
Okay, Moses. Now, to me, that was in a nutshell right there. But now, here comes the next question. We know, based on what this gentleman just told us about Rome and what they got going on in Rome. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we enforce that? Now, this is kind of rough because we're talking about putting the rubber on the pavement and actually meeting the man face to face. Now, we got something to our advantage because we've already took and placed the will on file. We got that on file. We got the administrative portions of the will. We got the affidavit of identity. We have our estate letter. We have the Declaration of Human Rights. We have the rights of indigenous people. We have a notice of intent and a notice of understanding and intent and claim of right. And then we have a judicial notice and proclamation of status. We have these backup documents. Now, and we know all about these documents because we have taken the time to read and study these documents. Okay, so we got that. Now, when it comes to exercising your freedom and right to travel, now, we have people out there with guns and badges who don't know jack about the difference between a right to travel and a driver. They really don't. They don't know nothing. So we don't want to argue. We don't want to debate with anybody. Okay. So you have some options there now. And I always recommend that first thing you want to do is get your vehicle deregistered. We want to opt out of that contract. Okay. So when you buy one, they automatically ties you there, so we want to go back and untie that knot, get that done. Okay. And later on, you can set up your trust and have that listed as your property and all that. Because what we're talking about doing now is we're talking about protecting ourselves and enforcing our rights. See, they can give you all the rights in the world. They can say, well, you got the right to have freedom of speech. But if you can't enforce that right, you ain't got no rights. We're talking about all the rights that you have, and the rights that you have are the rights that you can enforce. We're talking about enforcement of these rights. Okay, so we're riding along down the highway. We have our dash cam on. We have in the back dash. We have audio and video recorders installed inside the vehicle. We have a cell phone. We have a necklace, a bracelet with all these audio and video cameras in there. We don't have a driver's license because we're not, don't need anybody permission to do something we already got a right to do. So we're riding along. And all of a sudden, somebody comes up behind us, they flashing lights, declaring an emergency. It is at that point we need to find out where the injured party is. We need to know that. Okay, so we want to ask them to make sure we get this on the record on our recording devices. We'll make sure that we clearly have this on the recording device because what we're about to do is enforce contract. Someone is coming out. I need to see if you got permission. No, I don't have permission, but if you could please, first of all, show me some identification, because we both need to be identified. You know, you sign me, I need to know who you are. I'm prepared to let you know who I am. Please provide proof, you know, so they could be captured by the cameras, clearly showing that an emergency has been declared and you're prepared to provide an injured party. Now, the next thing that we're going to need to know is if you can please provide me with the name and address of the person or company that's paying me to drive, and because you asked me for a driving license, you said that you pulled me over because I was speeding, my tail light was out, and that may have caused an injury to someone. I need you to provide that person that was injured. Also, we got all this here on the record. So now it is at this point that you are in a position now to enforce your rights, because you have record, you have evidence. Okay. The FBI will tell you that when you are told to step out of the vehicle, if you do so, you'll be automatically volunteering for abduction. So you can politely inform the private contractor who is masquerading as an officer of the law with a gun and badge, which was not elected by the public, which makes him a private contractor, because all officers are elected officials, but he wasn't. However, if he's telling you to step out the vehicle, could you please inform him, for the record, that if I step outside the vehicle, according to the FBI, I'm volunteering for abduction. However, if you snatch my car door open or bust my windshield and unlock my car and pull me out, I have been abducted by you, sir. Make sure I got your name and all of this information down, okay? Now, this is just one way of the enforcement of your rights. See, we're under the impression that, oh, I have a right to do this right here. Okay, so you got a right. But then that's been violated. So what are you going to do about it? Have you made any preparations for the enforcement of your rights? And if you haven't, you have none. I hate to be so blunt, but I mean that's pretty much just the bottom line. I mean I'm just going to lay it out. And as we go forward here this evening, we have people that's going to pretty much back up what I'm trying to tell you and trying to get you to understand here about, you know, we have people say, well, you know, I have a constitutional right to do this here, you know. Really? I never forget one time I was a telemarketer, and we were telemarketing and trying to get people to make donations, and in return for their donations, we were giving them stickers that says talking about law enforcement, and in other words, to lead the criminals to believe that this residence is protected by law enforcement and so on and so forth. And I was talking to this lady on the phone, and I said, well, ma'am, if you go ahead and send a donation, you can take that sticker there and put it in the windows of your house, and when a criminal come by and see that right there, she said, well, excuse me, hold it right there, young man. She said, I don't mean to be rude, but don't nobody stop to read no sticker when they're robbing you. I said, yes, ma'am, I understand what you're saying, and I really do. And we're going to start with your name. Let's deal with that.
Hi out there in Fremantleland. A lot of people seem to be having a bit of difficulty with the name thing, and what I'm trying to do with these little video clips on YouTube is to try and limit the length of the video to from between 10 minutes and 20 minutes, so that people don't get too bored and don't get overloaded with a lot of information. So although I have put stuff out there on the name, a lot of people are still trying to argue the name. So let's delve a little deeper into it and see just how complex this name issue is. So why do we need a name is what we're going to be addressing in this video. And how does the name identify us, or does the name in identify us? So we're going to use quite a few different sources here, but Butterworth's is our New Zealand Law Dictionary, and it defines name as a word or combination of words by which a person, place or thing, a body or class, or any object of thought is designated or known. Now, we all know that a person is not us. So let's look a little bit further into that, because from when I was a little nipper, the thing that I got taught was to respond to the name. And so the moment your parents called you, you responded to your name. And I think most people would agree that this is how we became conditioned into accepting a name. But however, our printout or extract in Australia, or birth certificate, long form, short form birth certificate in America, shows that we were only given Christian or first names. That is the record that our parents filled out and handed into the registrar shows only first names. Yet all paperwork that comes to us is addressed to Mr. Doe, and once again in the all capitals. Sometimes it's just Mr. And not in all capitals, because that's another little trick they use on us. And in the past, all in the free man movement have argued about the all caps name, but it's got us nowhere. So we have to look a little bit further to see why. So Butterworth showed us the first definition I pulled up there, that a body has a name. And so if you go down to the local cemetery, you will see that all the tombstones are in all capitals. Ships have a name for identification purposes, so that when they're sailing the seas or they have a manifest, that the people know how it's coming. Corporations have names. And towns have a name. Now, Butterworth showed us all those. Out of all those pictures I've just shown you, there was two things that really, really stand out. And out of the definition, it was very obvious that man was not mentioned in the definition. All of those that were mentioned were spelt in all capitals. Did you remember that? They were all spelt in capitals. Therefore, we have to come to the conclusion that if we respond to the name, number one, we are dead. Number two, we are a corporation. Or number three, we are a ship or a vessel. Or we are the whole three. And I believe we are the whole three of those things. So therefore, if we are dead, we have died intestate. We didn't leave a will. So if we didn't leave a will, a whole different set of circumstances is going to come into being. Someone needs to administer our estate. If we're a ship or a vessel, we come under maritime law. So you can see how sneaky they've been in getting us into their system. And if we're a corporation, we can be dragged off to court. So under the three different things there, we can see now how they are attacking us and how they are getting us to respond, simply by the words. Now, Bovier's Online Law Dictionary, under a name, no man can have more than one Christian name. Though two or more names usually kept separate, as John and Peter, may undoubtedly be compounded so as to form, in contemplation of the law, but one. So we'll have a look at an example there. If we hyphenate our first names, John hyphen Henry, they become one in contemplation of the law. Okay, so that may be worth knowing. Our born records show that we were given first names only. So if you check your printout, what your father and mother did, what they put on the information going into the registrar, we were only given first names. But our birth certificate was where we suddenly had a surname or a family name. And so I believe it is our surname that is causing the problem. Not the first names, or maybe the first names as well, but it's the surname that is the major problem, and this is what we have to address. So we'll go to another source that that we quite often use, and that's the Bible. So what does the Bible have to say about names? Some of you may find this a stretch too far, but just accept what I'm giving out as information, store it away, and don't become angry or bitter, or just accept that maybe we have been misled all the way. So, because this is going to be a stretch for some of you, I can assure you. Exodus 20.2, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Now, what if this is a code? What if it meant that the all caps name was keeping us in slavery? Now, I've been right through the Bible, and there is only one word in the whole Bible that is capitalized, and it is Lord, L-O-R-D. Now, I know that it is the capital's name that is keeping us in slavery. So what if this code was interpreted, or what if the Bible was interpreted the way that I'm interpreting it, and saying that if we stop using that name, we come out of the house of slavery. We're no longer slaves. Exodus 20.7, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Once again, what if we are guilty if we take or use the name? If we use the Father's name, if the Son uses the Father's name, Lord, we're guilty, it says. How important is the name?
What is the three shillings? Oh, it's good now.
Welcome forward. Now, looking at that little clip, which is another area where a lot of clues are given, is in movies and songs and books and that sort of thing. We get a lot of clues from these things. Now, the postmaster or the registrar considered the name very important. That's why he said it'll be a shilling to tie up at the dock, and we will need your name. So what he was saying there, another name for birth, or to tie up at the dock, is to birth. Now, we received a birth certificate, B-I-R-T-H, but when a ship ties up at the dock, it's birth, B-E-R-T-H, virtually the same thing. Maybe they just put the I in to confuse us on birth. So we were given a birth certificate, but to tie up or birth at the dock, you also needed a name. So rather interesting that they're giving these clues away in movies all the time. The corporation must have a vessel, corporation, or estate to attach its charges to. They cannot put the charges against the living man. They can only do it against the corporation, or the vessel, or the estate. So we now need to discover how we can be identified without a name. Now, this could be tricky or maybe not. Identity, evidence, sameness. It is frequently necessary to identify persons, which is the corporation, and things. In criminal prosecutions and in actions for torts and on contracts, it is required to be proved that the defendants have in criminal actions and for injuries been guilty of the crime or injury charged. And an action on a contract that the defendant was a party to it. It's a bit gobbledygook for most of you to understand, so we'll look for a better one, which is Butterworth's definition. This is very precise. A doctrine that holds that an individual that acts as a company is treated as one and the same as the company. Such a person is not merely acting as a servant or agent of the company. He or she is an embodiment of the company. The doctrine of identification is thus distinct from vicarious responsibility. So right there, they're telling us that if we respond to the name, we are the company. Or if you look at that word, an embodiment of the company, body is contained within that word. So we are the body, the dead body of that company, but we have brought the action to life by acting as a servant or agent of the estate. The doctrine of identification is also the traditional method by which companies are held liable in most countries under the principles of the common law. According to this theory, the solution for the problem of attributing fault to a corporation for offences that require intention was to merge the individual within the corporation with the corporation itself. I think that pretty much sums it up, that if we respond to the name, we are the estate. So what we have to conclude from this is that a name gets us into trouble. Absolutely no doubt. We end up paying for it. If we identify with the name, it gets us into trouble also. So as they have set up a trust vessel corporation, how on earth can we take some sort of control over this beast that is controlling us? Well, we'll need to look at how a deceased estate works. Just in case you're not aware of how it works, well, first of all, we have to have a body. So there's John Doe, and he's left his estate there. Now, the estate must have beneficiaries, and it also must have an executor for the estate. That's the threesome. Okay? So when a person dies, their estate is administered by personal representatives. If the deceased person made a will, their personal representatives will be the executors appointed in the will. Now, that could be relatives or anyone. Where there is no will, personal representatives are appointed by the court under letters of administration and are called administrators. And in this case, the person's estate will be distributed according to the laws of intestacy. Okay, so you can guarantee that we did not leave a will when we were declared dead or lost at sea after 7 years. Okay, so they will have to appoint someone for us. Now, the Wills Act 2007 shows us in the interpretation, for the purposes of this act, unless the context requires another meaning, personal representative means administrator, executor, or trustee. So there you have it. We have a personal representative who can be an administrator, executor, or trustee working for the estate. Okay, but it would appear that the only way to get around this name identity problem is to come in as the person's personal representative, which it tells you in the Wills Act there. So if we come in as the person's personal representative, it's not as easy as it looks, but how should we go about it? Let's look again to Scripture. And whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If ye shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. Okay, what's the name that we need to ask in? Okay, let's go back to our printout and have a look at what it says on, this is my particular printout here. And right at the top, oh, hold on, we'll just go back a second there. In the first column, you see when born and where born. Okay, by the end of that document, I am no longer alive, I can assure you. But I was born, and at the top there, it says Christian or first names only. Bear that in mind. The next down there in brackets says, if child stillborn to be noted in this column. Well, it definitely looks to me like my father has noted my first names in that column. Therefore, William Henry is dead. And there's only one other name left up there, and that's Christian. So it seems obvious to me that we need to be Christian. If we're going to go in as the person's personal representative, we need to be Christian. Okay. Christ is the person's personal representative, or Christian, as the printout suggests. Now, so if we were writing to someone, a letter could perhaps look like this. If you look up on the right-hand side here, person's personal representative, Christian. Now, you're going to notice something here, security number. That is your printout number. You'll notice there is a slash there. Okay? Notice to cease and desist. This is what I use for traffic tickets. So, we, the underwriters, with clean hands and equity, hereby serve notice that unlawful entry by mercantile agents without claim of right leaves the underwriter a vulnerable adult. Okay, now the last part of the letter, once again here, I'm going to point out, if you can see this, John Henry Doe. Now, that is the birth certificate number. So any unlawful attempt by mercantile agents to access our license and commerce, that is our license and commerce, the birth certificate there, which is distinct from the printout on the previous page, which had a slash there. So now what we're doing is identifying the two parties so that everyone can see the difference between Doe the corporation and Christian, de jure party. Now, Crown here will sign it, Sovereign there, and person's personal representative is Christian. Okay, so now we have the three parties here, Crown, Sovereign, and person's personal representative. So in the Crown one, all you would put is the spell the name in all capitals. The Sovereign, you would just put your initials, but the person's personal representative you would sign as Christian. And if you did your letters like that, I think you might have a different result. Okay, now let's just wrapping up. We need to define what death means in the law. So we'll have a look in the legal dictionary, thefreedictionary.com. The law recognizes different forms of death, not all of them meaning the end of physical life. Oh, isn't that interesting? Not all of them meaning the end of physical life. Is that not a big clue? So well, look, the term civil death is used in some states to describe the circumstances of an individual who has been convicted of a serious crime or sentenced to life imprisonment. Okay, civil death, life imprisonment, sounds like that is the sentence we have been given. Ah, we go to another one. Merriam-Webster.com, civil death noun. The status of a living person equivalent in its legal consequences to natural death. Oh, my goodness. The status of a living person equivalent in its legal consequences to natural death. They're telling us there we have died a civil death. And specifically, it means deprivation of civil rights. So I think you can see now that the corporation, we need to identify ourselves quite separate to Doe the corporation. Now we need to look at how we come back to life. And this may upset some people, but so be it. Just take it as information. Resurrection. Capitalized. The rising of Christ from the dead. The rising of Christian from the dead? Often capitalized. The rising to life of all the human dead before the final judgment. The state of one risen from the dead. My conclusion, if we are born again Christian, do we rise from the dead and inherit the Father's estate? I'll leave that up to you to decide.
Okay, Moses, we're back. It's very, very interesting how Rome has taken the Bible and used it to formulate law, but at the same time have removed law from the public school system to keep you from mastering law, which all derived from the ancient African records. Now, one very important thing that we have to understand is when it comes to the enforcement of a right that we claim to have, I mean, we got a right. Okay, you got a right to do this. You got a right to do this. You got a right to do that. You got a right to do this. Okay, if I got a right, my question is, what percentage of all these rights I'm supposed to have can I actually truly live under? None of them is the answer unless you are able to enforce them. If you cannot enforce them, then you have no rights. I just want to make sure I keep reiterating that, because there's a lot of people who, you know, they keep telling me about, well, the Constitution and that, man, don't tell me nothing about the Constitution. Stop it. Stop doing that. My question is, what do you know? What terminology have you defined and got for yourself that you understand? What have you looked up and understood? Because if you do it that way, then you are able to handle yourself. You are able to handle certain circumstances. Now, at this point, if anybody got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. Follow the prophets on your phone. I open up the line. You can tell me what your situation is or what's going on and how you see this thing, because I'm trying to make sure that you clearly understand this thing about your rights. And then we're going to get into the courtroom thing and look at all that. Matter of fact, we're going to do that next. But if you got a question or comment, now's the time to raise your hand. The call-in number for this broadcast is 310-982-4184. If you got a question, now it's time to raise your hand. Okay?
Okay, Moores. When it comes to your student loan debt, now, when it comes to student loan debt, there are things that occur that a lot of people are unaware of. First of all, they tell you they're going to give you a loan, and the next thing you know, they're going to tell you that, okay, well, we have made it available for you to have this loan. Your classes are such and such, your books are such and such. All you got to do is go over to the school, but you haven't seen any money. They have told you that they have given your tuition to somebody else, and they're waiting on you to go to school. But when it's all over with, you graduate and all of that good stuff, the next thing you know, you're getting a bill for money that you've never seen. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com and let's get in there and see what we can do about this thing and get some of this stuff dissolved and canceled. To be burdened with debt is not a good thing. So what we want to do is look at all our options. The United States operates on a continuous series of contracts. It's currently operating in a bankruptcy, but House Joint Resolution 192 is intact. So therefore, let's formulate some documentation. Let's send it out and see if we can cancel that thing, okay? Contact me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m.
Back, Moses. Now, what we're going to do now is we're going to deal with the courtroom procedures, and we're going to watch how this plays out. Because, see, what we're dealing with here is real life. There's a lot of broadcasts and stuff that's going on. There are a lot of blog talk radios, shows. There's a lot of articles that are posted and stuff and all this, but when it really boils down to it, we have to ask ourselves the question, what is it that I have that I can actually physically use to change my circumstances? What is it that I can take and use? And this is what we deal with here at Morris Talk Live 100. We try to put you something in your hand that you can actually use. And I must say that I am quite proud of the brothers and sisters across the United States that have been listening and they've accessed my archives. They have learned, they have taken the time to learn how to defend themselves. And they call me. And they tell me about their successes and stuff. And, at this point, I guess you all are wondering, well, we don't ever hear from none of these people. Well, I found out something, which is quite interesting. They are fantastic at doing the do and succeeding at what they do in the world. But, you know, when I bring them on the broadcast and stuff, they don't make good guests. So that's why you haven't heard from them. I hear from them all the time. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit down and talk to them and make sure that they are prepared to come on the broadcast and tell us exactly what they did and how it's going and all that other stuff. We don't need all of that. So that's where we are with that. And keep in mind, one more time, tomorrow night we're going to have Urban Geoponics brother Diallo Sakura from Eastside Farms, the Hamlet Eastside Farms, will be with us as our personal guest, and then we have other guests that will be coming on this month. So we're going to try to make this the most informative month for you so that you can get something that you can actually use in your life to actually make the necessary changes in your life. You know, this ain't just weak. This ain't just
insane. Hi, Dan, out there in Freeman land. Over the last few weeks, I've had quite a number of inquiries about people who have actually ended up in court and have sort of come unstuck in a big way. And so I thought I'd put this little presentation together to help some of you who haven't perhaps got as far along the path with doing the paperwork and are still at the courtroom stage. Because once you get the paperwork done, you will never need to go to court again. So this is for the people who have unfortunately ended up in the courts, and it is a scary place to be. But we never go there. Only corporations go to court. So the first thing you've got to learn to do is to make sure that the paperwork is correct, and you'll never need to go to court again. So, but for those who haven't got there, let's have a look and see how we can put this right. If you've not done the paperwork and do end up in court, here is what you have to do. To get us into the court, someone has to lay a charge. Now, the charge may be running a red light. It could be any number of things. But someone has to lay the charge. So we'll go to Bouvier's Online Law Dictionary, which is the easiest for most of you out there in Freemanland to access. Just go into Google and type in Bouvier's Online Law Dictionary, and it will bring it up. And then you can have a look at every word that they're presenting to you, because it's most important to know the words if you're going to rebut anything that they say. So let's have a look at what charges. Contracts. Straight away, they're telling us what it is. It's a contract. It's an obligation entered to by the owner of an estate. Okay, now here's the clue. Who owns the estate? Well, as the government set the estate up, the government is the owner of the estate. So an obligation entered into by the owner of an estate, which makes the estate responsible for its performance. Okay, there's only one way that they can make it perform, and that's to trick us into performing. So once we know who we are, this makes it a lot easier. If we know that we're not that estate, we can rebut all their presumptions. Okay, now the next part says, any obligation binding upon him who enters into it, which may be removed or taken away by a discharge. Okay, so they're telling us there that we can discharge the charge. The next part says, that particular kind of commission which one undertakes to perform for another. Now, what they're telling us here is that the person who lays the charge against us is going to get a commission if they can get us to perform. So why do you think they try so hard to get us to go into the court and perform? Because once we get fined, they get a commission on it. Okay, which one undertakes to perform for another? In keeping the custody of goods, in keeping the custody of his goods. So they are holding on to our title of the estate. Okay, and this is what is called the charge. They're coming in with a charge against our estate, and they're trying to get a commission on it. Here in New Zealand, they do it under Section 49 of the District Court Act, and it's in one of my other videos that you can have a look at as well. Okay, but let's look a bit further into Bouvier's Online Law Dictionary again, and it tells you, wills, devises, an obligation which a testator imposes on his devisee. Okay, so who's the testator and who's the devisee? So the testator is them, and they're imposing it on us. As if the testator give Peter Blackacre and direct that he shall pay to John during his life an annuity of $100, which shall be a charge on the said land. Now, we are the land. If you go back through some of my older videos, you will see that we are the land. Or if a legacy be and directed to be paid out of the real property. So what they're trying to do is to raid our property by getting us to perform. So if we know these sort of things, then we can start to discover what the courts are. But now let's look at the Butterworth's New Zealand Law Dictionary, and you'll see it's also the same, an encumbrance on the land or on a fund. Okay? And number four, a commission. Okay, so once again, they're telling us that they can get a commission if they can get us to perform. It's very, very simple. It's all about money. Now all we have to find out is who is laying the charge, who the charge is against, and how to discharge it without going through all the rigmarole of getting convictions and all that sort of hoo-ha and paying huge amounts of money. So now the prosecutor comes into the picture. He's the one who lays the charge against the estate of John Doe. Now, we are a deceased estate, so we've put the tombstone in there to show you who it's laid against. When we were born, an estate was created, and the prosecution must somehow get us to pay the charges for the estate. So if he can do that, he's going to get a commission. And that's the whole idea of what the court is. Now, the prosecutor lodges the charge with the court registrar. The court registrar has a look at the document, and if she thinks that she can make money from it, she's going to put it before the court. Because the prosecutor is hoping that we don't know who we are, and is laying a bet with the registrar that we do not know who we are. Therefore, if we don't know who we are, we're going to end up paying the charges out of our wallet. Now, I don't think many of us want to do that, really. But however, the registrar accepts the wager, stamps it with the stamp, lodges it in the court, and sends the paperwork, which is only a bill of exchange. She sends the paperwork to the real live man. There's the real live man. Now, the real live man gets served documents and sees his name. And because we think that that name is actually us, we think it's meant for us. It's not, though, folks. It's not. Okay, now one of two things is now likely to take place. And the first one is that we will panic and hire a lawyer. Or we may go along to the court and represent ourselves. Most of the people in the free man movement go along and represent themselves. But both are wrong. So we need to see why both are wrong. And it's really quite simple, is because represent, if we're going to represent ourselves, we have to look at it. Represent is actually two words, represent. Now, if you present yourself, that means you present yourself in front of someone. But if you represent, what you're actually doing is representing yourself as the fiction or the deceased estate. And here we go to Beauvais, and it says representation of persons, a fiction of the law. Now, if that doesn't wake you up to what's going on, then nothing will, because it's not fact, it's fiction. In other words, a fantasy. A fiction of the law, the effect of which is to put the representative in the place, degree, or right of the person represented. Okay, so what they're trying to do is to put us in place of the person which is the deceased estate. So, therefore, the moment that we do stand up and say we're going to represent ourselves, we have got, or the courts have got, joinder between ourselves and the fiction. Now, I can't get any clearer than that, a fiction of the law. Therefore, never hire a lawyer and never represent yourself. If the judge sees that you have no lawyer, his first question is always going to be, do you have a lawyer? And if you don't, he'll say, are you going to represent yourself? Now, a lot of the people in the free man movement have in the past gone in and says, yes, I'm going to represent myself. But no, you must reply, I will be myself. Now let's look at the courtroom, because it's a scary, scary place. And if you don't know what's going on in there, then it makes it a lot harder. So the first thing that we have to realize is the judge is there to oversee the proceedings, because there are other players in the court, which we're going to introduce you to. The prosecutor, He comes in on behalf of the Crown. Now, no matter what, no matter what you've been told, no matter what you think, the Crown is actually your surname. Now, he is coming in on behalf of your surname or the deceased estate. But he's going to try to get you to pay the charges, which we will see. Now, the registrar comes in with the account books. Now, the registrar is the one taking the gamble, and she has to make sure that she is going to get this through, because what happens when you first go into court is that if they get a plea from you, then they're going to put a 90-day bond out, or the registrar is going to put a 90-day bond out onto the bond market with the hope of getting a monetary return. Okay, so we've got three of them there: judge, prosecutor, and registrar. Well, boy, that seems a bit stacked against us, doesn't it? So where do we, the real live men, fit into this picture? Well, it's going to be a switch and bait. They're going to try and switch us. The prosecutor needs us to step in and take over the role he is occupying, because he's coming in as trustee of the deceased estate, but he does not want to keep that role, because if he does, he's going to have to get his checkbook out and pay himself. And I don't think he would like that. But should the man appear in court, whether he's with a lawyer, whether he's going to represent himself, no matter what, there is a maxim at law that states the presence of the body corrects the flaw in the name. Okay, so your name is only John. It's not John Doe. So Doe is the Crown, but to get joinder, just the mere turning up in court, the presence of the body corrects the flaw in the name. So that's why we never go to court. We can throw it out before it gets there. Okay, now that we are in court, it's plain to see that we were totally disadvantaged. Three of them against us. There's only one way to get out of the situation, folks. As the prosecutor has laid the charges, we must attack him and get the judge on our side. If we do that, we're going to win. But to ensure that we're successful, we need to know just a couple of things. Any time the judge addresses us, he is offering us a contract. So don't worry too much about the name thing. Don't get into big arguments about the name, because the name isn't that important, I can assure you. What is important is to see what he is offering us. It is a contract. Now, the way that we respond to the judge is, with all due respect, Your Honor, are you offering us a contract? If so, may we please have full disclosure of that contract. Now, whenever he says anything to us, we must respond to that. Don't try and argue the name. I can tell you, you're not going to get far with that. It's much better to try to, you'll see in a minute what we're going to do. Some of the contracts he will offer us are, please take a seat, or please be seated. What is your name? How do you plead? Please be quiet while I'm speaking. Now, if he offers you any one of those contracts, it is really, really important that you ask him if he is offering you a contract. But do it politely. Do it with all due respect, Your Honor. And remember this, the judge only has three shots or three attempts to get you into contract. And then he has to either leave the court or come in, bring something else into the court. And we've had judges leave the court and then come back in and have another three shots. We've had the judges come in and say, arrest that man, and we've told them not to take another step forward, because they're only offering you a contract, and if you accept that contract, you will be in trouble. The judge will try many things to unsettle us, but if we stand our ground and ask for disclosure of the contract in a polite tone, then they must listen to us. when you've been to court a few times, it becomes easier, and we jump in before the judge speaks normally. If we can get in, as soon as we walk in there and the judge just looks at you, we just say to him, "Your Honour, with all due respect, before we proceed any further, may I ask the prosecution a question?" Okay, the prosecutor is the one who has brought the charge, so we've got to address him. Should the judge intervene, politely ask, "With all due respect, Your Honour, is he not the one bringing the charges? Why are you denying me the chance to talk to the man who is charging me?" All right, because the judge will try to come to their aid all the time. In one court case, I actually said I was there on behalf of the Crown, and the one who had come in on behalf of the Crown, his eyes went as wide as saucers. Anyway, once we have the right to ask, we should ask the following questions. The following question should have the charges dismissed or discharged. Any of the following questions will cause major embarrassment to the prosecutor, and the judge will try to intervene again. Now, you must say, "Are you trying to deny me justice, Your Honour?" Number one, this is the first question you could ask. There's five or six of them here. Would the prosecutor please identify the defendant? Now, as I've told you earlier in the presentation, the defendant is a deceased estate. Is there any way that the prosecutor can identify the defendant? Absolutely no. Now, the first time I did this in court, the prosecutor picked up a piece of paper that had my name on it and held it out towards me with his right hand and said, "That's him over there." But he was actually holding the piece of paper in his right hand. So if they should try that trick on you, just say, "Would the prosecutor please put his hand on the shoulder of the defendant?" Now, if you've done your paperwork wrong, they may be able to identify you, but it's still a long straw. "Mr. Prosecutor, you presume to know who I am. Who are you?" Now, that one will really make them squirm, because they are coming in as the prosecutor, as the trustee, and they're trying to switch you into that role. "Mr. Prosecutor, may I have full disclosure?" They can never, ever give us full disclosure. And the reason that if they gave full disclosure, they would have to identify the defendant. They would have to identify what they're actually doing, that what the charges are, and various other things that they cannot disclose. It's impossible. They cannot give you full disclosure. "Mr. Prosecutor, please identify the injured party." Now, if you've been caught for running a red light or speeding, there is no injured party. They cannot identify the injured party. "Mr. Prosecutor, are you acting as trustee for John Doe Estate?" Ooh, that one's going to get them. They could be administrator, so you could ask them, "Are you acting as trustee or administrator for John Doe Estate, and trying to make me the trustee and you the beneficiary?" Because that's what they're trying to do. They want to become the beneficiary and make you pay the charges. "Mr. Prosecutor, are you trying to gain entry by deception and fraud?" Now, entry, I won't go into it in this video, but you need to look up entry. It is in one of my other videos, but entry is entry into our state by deception and fraud. And they certainly are. They most certainly are. There are many more questions that could be asked, but there will be no need. As if he fails to answer any one of them, just turn to the judge and say, "Your Honour, with all due respect, we now ask that this matter be discharged." They may still try to test us, as that is their job, but they are just making sure that we do know who we are and that we do know their procedure. And Also, be very careful whenever they address us as you, because we're not you, and say, Your Honor, would you please identify who you is? Because it's not us. Okay, now, finally, just be safe in the fact that we are upholding our inherent rights. We have no right to be in the court. They're just using us for one thing. The court is actually the bank. It is the money system. And that's all they're trying to do, is make money out of us to keep their stupid corporation going. So I hope this has been helpful. And after a couple of times of watching it, you may feel a bit more secure in going to court, or you may do the way that we do it, rebut all the presumptions and never go to court. Good luck on your journey.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, I don't know about you. When I was growing up, I loved to play chess. But I think now, and I no longer want to play chess. I don't want to play chess anymore. I have a wonderful chessboard, huge chessboard. You cannot even sit down and to a chair and use it to play chess. You have to put it on a table, and you have to use bar stools, or you have to stand up in order to move pieces. They're just that huge. But I have found a game that is 10 times better than chess, and it is the law game. In my opinion, it's the best game in town. It is. They never cease to amaze me with what they do. But the response that they get from me and other people, that especially the brothers and sisters that have access to my archives and stuff, that's doing the study, that's doing the research and playing the game, is beating them. I'm talking about beating them down to the dirt from one end of America to the other. It, to me, this is the best game in town. This is fascinating. What the court has to do is get you to agree to be somebody that you're not. Now, if I walked up to you, and your name was, we'll say your name was Sharon, and I say, well, hello, Margaret, how are you? The first thing you're going to do is say, well, my name is not Margaret, my name is Sharon. No, sure it is. You look like Sharon, Margaret to me. You are you sure? There'll be a big discussion, and no matter what I say, you're going to insist on who you are opposed to who I attempt to make you to be. And this is pretty much the same basic modus operandi that the court system and the United States Corporation is using. The whole thing operates that way. They can throw up all kind of smoke screens, everything they want, but the bottom line will be, okay, Margaret, and if you don't object, for the record, to straighten this record out to make sure we got this thing, they're going to automatically have a goal on Margaret. Even though Sharon is standing there, we have called you Margaret, and you didn't say that, so you Margaret. So now we can proceed with prosecution and all of this stuff right
okay,
here.
Okay, Morris, now, when it comes to dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, that's a big dog. So what you have to do is make sure all the legs and all the feet locked down on that. You have to meticulously take your time and do your documentation on that. If they burden you with debt from the Internal Revenue Service, there are things that you need to put in place to make sure that you're able to handle that situation. For the solution to your Internal Revenue situation, contact me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Standard Time, and then tell me about it. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. The solution is there. Okay. Don't forget, http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, give me a call, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Okay.
Now we're gonna deal with some more stuff that you can use, because we understand now that the whole thing hinges on contract, offer and acceptance. Offer and acceptance. You get a letter in the mail, you got to come to court because such and such thing. All right. What's your first line of defense? The first thing is to immediately respond to what you got in the mail. Point blank. We don't get scared and run down and put it down and, oh my goodness, ringing our head and I need a drink and I'm gonna get to this next week and no. We don't do all of that. We look and say, well, ooh, this is wonderful. Somebody that I don't even know has sent me something about law when I already know that law stopped in 1938, and after 1938, we have public policy. So this is an attempt at extortion, because what it will boil down to is if you go in there, the judge's job is to make sure that we get this matter over and done with so we can tell you how much money we need. This has got to be the biggest scam in the history of the world. And I mean, this kind of thing here is going on all over the United States. They're doing this all over the United States. They say, we're going to put up, they have gotten away from, they're trying to get away from the police stopping you on the streets and writing you tickets and stuff for what they say is breaking the law. And now we're putting up cameras. So if you run a red light or something like that, we ain't got to call you on the phone. We don't have to do nothing. We can send you a letter showing you that this, we have video footage of you. This is a photograph of you. Here's the bill for what you owe us because you broke the law. Isn't that amazing? These people are going and taking technology. They're using technology on us now. So they won't have to do no paperwork and nothing like that. And we need you to show up. And when you show up, make sure you have your checkbook with you so that you can, because see, last year we made $800 million last year. And we have a new goal. We're going to make $150 million this year with this new technology. We're going to test it out on you and see how it works. Because for the past 175 years, you have not taken the time to learn anything about law or how to defend yourself. You just went along with everything because, hold on, no trouble. I was... Y'all got to excuse me. Because this thing is amazing, man. We went down to Key West. They have these toll systems set up. Going down into the Florida Keys, you're going to have to get on this special highway. Let me see. I think of what's the name of it. in a minute. But you're going to pay to go through these toll gates. Okay, now when you pay to go through these toll gates, you could drive all the way down where you got to go. And you can go through, you're going to go through some more of them for the little intersecting towns and all that. But you have paid your way to use this stretch of highway to go down to the Keys. Now, what's going to happen is we're going to send you a bill because you came through there, you spoke to the clerk gave you a ticket, but we have you on audio and video, so you owe us. That is amazing. And you'll get the bill for... I mean, we charge you by the mile. It is, man, this is fantastic. They took law out of school, so what we want to do is we put law back in so that we can learn it and we can use it. And we can ask the judge, is he operating as judge, a banker? And for the record, the judge is will be operating as judge and not banker. Today, you see, you understand what I'm talking about. This is one of the most. This thing is so amazing when you pay attention to it, because we have people who actually believe that these people on the streets with the guns and badges and the sirens and all that—they are actually enforcing a law. How can you, we just had the federal government say, well, we declared we're bankrupt and we ain't come back on because Obama, he don't want to do right. So we're not coming back on. But this morning, I was listening to a little radio broadcast, and this morning they said that we have just discovered that there is a law that was passed before we collapsed where there are other. Our other people can't get a paycheck. So I'm waiting on the next one to come in with the other laws that we discovered that happened that nobody don't know about, where we can inch it back on in with our new discoveries of what we meant to tell you, but we, you know, with so much commotion that we didn't get a chance to tell you about it. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who have questions, comments, go ahead, Rich. Area code 773. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question and comment. 773,
hello?
Area code. Hey, man, what's going on? Let me have it.
Nothing much. How you doing? This is Brother Dean M. Bay from Chicago.
Hey,
I got a question. How you doing, brother? When you enter the courtroom, do you ask the judge before you enter, is he a judge or a banker before entering? What do you enter first?
You can already be entered because they got things, they got, what they're trying to do is they're trying to perfect the robbery. And they have, down here in Florida, what they have now is the courtrooms are packed. Because we don't know the law. And people are sitting out in the lobby, and they've gotten to the point where they'll send the little man out there to say, okay, everybody, if you gather around, the judge, he has a heavy caseload, and in order to really move past this, we're going to have to, you know, just, you know, you, if you say you're not guilty or whatever, that's going to back up everything, that's going to hold up everything. Go ahead and plead guilty to the charges. The judges give you fine. You just move, get this thing moving on through. That's what they're doing now. So when you go into the courtroom, the first thing you want to do is let the judge know that you want to separate the man from the fiction. You should have already been done that by having your records on file, got your will on file, and signed the administrative portion of your will to the case. Okay, then when you get in there, you will hear on special appearance, and you are challenging the status and jurisdiction of the court. And you need to know if the prosecuting attorney can present his license to practice law, enforcing the type of laws in the state of Florida. For the record, we need to know whether the judge is acting as a banker or judge today. And could you please, with all due respect, could you please let us know if you are employed by the county of Duval, the city of Jacksonville, or the state of Florida? And try to do that in all one breath, make sure it's on the record. So that what they'll do with you is they're going to put you to the side and finish the robbery. And then they'll get back to you, and then they're going to attempt to see if you know what they really think you know. And that's when you really let them have it, and yes, I know who I am. And, of course, they don't want to tangle with you. Now, if you've already gotten to court, that means that you haven't done what you were supposed to do as soon as you got a summons to be there in the first place. That's where we want to stop them at, right there at your house, before you ever go. You got another question?
No, that's it for right now.
Okay, brother. Okay, anybody else with a question or comment? Now's the time to ask your question, and we'll go ahead and answer it as best we can for you. Just keep in mind, if you ever get anything in the mail about it, going to court, and you want to deal with that right there. For those of you who do not have Counsel's Archive, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com and study that one page. There ain't no bells and whistles. It's, you know, ain't nothing distracting you right there, because we're trying to get a hold to stuff that we can actually use to stop these people, or to learn and master this game so that we can win. If you don't know the rules and regulations of the game, you can't win. Be aware of what changes and stuff that, you know, they're trying to add to public policy now. This public policy is what is masquerading as law. We want to get around that. But now, once you learn the rules and regulations of the game, you understand what law is, you learn how to look up terminology so you can clearly define it, you have ammunition. No one will tangle with you, because you're not like the rest of the sheep. And that's what we want to get away from. We don't want to be sheeple. We want to be able to be a formidable opponent. You said that such and such a thing, I object and I need to ask a question. We don't want to be combative. We want to be polite. We want to be polite in our mail when we're sending mail to these people. Now, what I want to do is I want to introduce you to something, and on those lines of what I'm talking about when you are dealing with these people, how to be polite and effective at the same time. Now, this is a cover letter by John Henry Doe. It says, "Thanks so much for your timely response to the debt validation letter I received from you on September the 13th, 2013. Please be patient with me in regard to this matter. As a teacher of law, I am forced to examine all points of matter at hand to ensure we are all on the same page concerning the account number so-and-so. Along with this cover letter of gratitude is my final question regarding the above account. As soon as this matter is completely cleared up, I will resume my proper position in this matter. One request made, we did not receive from your company a delivered copy of your license to collect the debt in the state of Florida. It may have been a slight oversight on your part. However, we will wait on its arrival to ensure the validation request was satisfied. Please respond to the final request contained in this package. We look forward to your prompt response. Our team of law officials are currently reviewing your validation response. Thank you for being patient with us." So here we have a cover letter on top of a 60-point affidavit asking them by law and telling them by law that they got to respond point by point line by line to that affidavit in a nice, professional, and courteous manner before we ever get to the court. So they got a copy. I got a copy. So if we do have to go, I can take a copy and file it to the court record and enforce it once I get there. You see how the game is played? That's how to play the game.
The solution to this is great because it doesn't matter what they do. All you have to do is wake up and realize who you are. And you've got more power than them anyways. Doesn't matter what lies they put in front of you. All you have to do is wake up and realize that you're not the slave. You're not the legal person they're trying to convince you that you are. And you're actually mankind. And you're above in the order of operations of how things work on this planet. You've got God, then you've got man, then you've got government, and then you've got corporations in that order. You are above government. Government is your creation. You own it. It works for you when you realize who you are. And that's one of the things we're trying to teach to people. Well, this is actually, and again, if this last issue with me wasn't proof of that, then I don't know what is. And if there was just outright tyranny right now, and there was no laws being obeyed anywhere or recognized or rights, I would still be in there, okay? They're going to test you. They're going to threaten you. They're going to see if you're going to fold and cave in and give in to their will and prove that you're a slave.
Is that what it's about, ultimately? It's a war of intention and willpower?
Absolutely. You have no rights unless you're willing to defend them. You only have the rights that you're willing to defend. That's it. That's the only rights you'll ever have. If you're not willing to stand up and defend any of your rights, then how many do you have?
None.
Then get to work because you got taxes that are due.
and again, let me go back to that point a little bit. In the monetary system as it is now, and of course it's not perfect. I mean, what is that has been invented or made by man? But nonetheless, there is a small wiggle room of freedom. You can handle your own business. If you do have your own money, you can choose where to spend it, etc., while other people are looking for the system to collapse or crash or take it away altogether. But what would be the danger if that happened? What do you see? How would that serve the agenda and governments even more, Dean?
Well, education for one. We stopped educating the young. We stopped educating our own kids, and we left it up to the tyrants that are trying to steal everything from us. Okay? So when the house thief is left in charge of educating your kids, you're going to have two house thieves. So the first failure is with us. And again, there's no problem with the system. The system works just fine. The system can be used to do very bad things, and the system can be used to do very good things. But the problem is that evil triumphs when good men do nothing.
Yeah.
Edmund Burke. Well, good men are doing nothing. That's changing. We're starting to do good. We're starting to stand up and say, nope, that's the end of her. And we got to remember that now we've got this now that we've got this internet and we've got this whole world of people that are connected now and sharing information. It's not like it was a couple of hundred years ago where all they had to do was start a couple of wars and all information broke down and countries went into mini dark ages again where everybody was more in fear of their lives and eating than they were in remaining educated, stuff like that. I think we're kind of at a turning point, a watershed moment maybe in human history here where the whole world is watching. And crimes like these just can't be hidden or buried anymore. And in order to destroy all the progress that we've made and all the people that are out there working and trying to do good, you'd almost have to destroy the world to cover that all up. And I don't think they're prepared to do that. So
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think there is a... In this also, there's a window of opportunity as they are trying to clamp down, bring in more control. They have to take more risks as they're doing that, and they will get more and more people to open up their eyes to what's really going on. And also at the same way then start to do the right thing within the system, basically wake up to the evils that are out there and just simply, again, vote with your dollar, so to speak. Do what you believe is right by supporting the people that you know and that is doing the right thing. It's a very it's really very simple, but most of the time we think that the solution has to be something really, really complicated and has to have a, you know, 12-step program, and it has to, you know, involve all these complicated things when it's just using common sense and doing the right thing.
Yeah, well, and exposing it is exactly it. And I'm big on ridicule and mocking. Those are two of my favorites as well, and satire.
Right.
So, like, when you're in an elevator with a corrections officer and they're like, oh, so you're one of those free men, instead of, like, denying it or trying to, like, get an argument of any kind or whatever arguments people use nowadays, I just come right back and shoot right back and say, well, yeah, of course I'm free, aren't you?
You're one of the enslaved ones then, huh?
Yeah, I'm really sorry if you're not free, you know, sorry that you're a slave kind of thing, and that makes them think. Like, we're inherently free. I just thought that was common sense. Like, you say free man like it's a derogatory thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just like the media taught you to react to a word like that.
Well, now, so, freedom is terrorism, and it's, you know, what's his name? Will Ferrell on a billboard with an American flag and a machine gun in front of him and says, freedom, you know? That's who you are now when you talk about that word kind of thing.
Yeah, it's they're losing, though. That's the funny thing, is that these are all acts of desperation. They are losing, and I always thank them for exposing themselves. Every time they do something stupid like this to me, I thank them. I said, thank you very much. You guys do a better job of exposing what you're doing than I ever could. Please keep it up. This last time in court, I told them that I should hire them for my PR department. Did you people wake more up, more of my fellow people than I possibly could? Like, and you're just getting my name out there more. Now more people are going to my website. This is great. Can you guys keep me in here another month? That's not the reaction they want from you.
No, exactly, and that's the way to look at it. I think as well. Then you, at the end of it, you don't have a crushed spirit. You come out winning, if you will, from the situation. Although that they have deprived you from, you know, X amount of days of your life as a free sovereign human being. But all right, if that's the prize then to help to spread your word even further, if you will, then I guess so be it for those who are willing to do that.
Yep. Oh, I told them that flat out. I said, well, don't you want to go home, when they're trying to get me to make application for bail? I said, of course I want to. I said, but I'm not willing to do anything just to go home. I said, I'm not gonna let you guys do what you're planning here. I'm not gonna grant jurisdiction. I'm not gonna contract with your court just to go home. I'm not a coward. I said, if you're gonna force me to stay here, then number one, I'm sure there's a lot of people in jail that could probably really benefit from learning their rights. And number two, I don't know if you guys have looked outside right now, but it's about minus 45, and I'm a contractor. You couldn't have picked a better month to throw me in jail. This is awesome, man. I really didn't want to have to go frame this week because it is really freaking cold outside. So I'll just sit in the cell. You people can feed me, and you're going to be liable for all the damages when I get out. And I can tell you right now, I can't earn money like that on a job site. The amount of damages you people are creating right now, I cannot earn that kind of money working for a living. So go ahead, do your worst.
Tell us about that again before we wrap things up then for this time. If there's any, what is going to happen now paperwork-wise? Are you going to, you know, send them stuff, et cetera? What's going on
even,
there?
Even just within the system, generally accepted practices of going to court and suing people, this is going to be monstrous. This is a pure human rights violation where they admit they're throwing you in solitary confinement due to your political beliefs. Just filing a standard lawsuit alone with everything I've got against these people is going to be a jackpot. Just a jackpot. Not only, but now I also get to test out a whole lot more stuff that I've been working on to do with commercial liens and what to do with them and where to go with them. And how to make and how to give them the full force and effect that people are looking for, right? And again, commercial lien, it's just what it says. It's a lien. The only way somebody's going to cut you a check is if you have shut their ability to conduct commerce down so badly that they'd rather pay you now because you're harming them further. You're harming them more than them just paying you would cost them. So I'm harming their business more than if they just were to pay me out and be rid of me. That's what a commercial lien will do. Getting an actual order to pay and starting to seize real property, a commercial lien will never do that. But we don't know exactly how to do that as well. And anybody that wants to study this stuff and with a little time and patience now can learn this, because there's been many people out there now that have made all of their research available online. It's all there. If you don't know how to do something, it's only because you're lazy. Because people have been making this available for years now, and I do find it interesting, by the way, and this lets me know that these people realize that the gig is up and they're in a lot of trouble. Every movement that I have seen come along in the last 6 months or a year has been headed up by a lawyer or an ex-lawyer. And I can tell you right now that all of these organizations are being created by the government or by the Bar Association or the Law Society to try to lure everybody into becoming part of the controlled opposition.
You want to
stop you from doing something on your own? No, 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 we got this. We got this. We filed a lawsuit. We're going to fix everything for all of you people. You don't have to do a thing. Bullshit. That doesn't pass my first smell rule. The minute they want people to start doing nothing, stop it. Look, no, no, you guys don't have to do anything anymore. We took care of it all. Yeah, sure. Sounds to me like somebody's worried about us doing something.
You want to name any titles or?
Nope.
Nope.
I'm not. I think people have probably come to know one thing, if anything else, for me, and it's that I do not comment on other people's work for the most part. I'll say who I like, whose work that I do like and stuff like that, but everybody's got the choice out there. If I was to start telling people what I thought of other organizations out there, am I not assuming liability for their decision-making process now? They don't have to go and read and look into it for themselves anymore, because they're just going to take what Dean said on face value. Isn't that why we're having the problems we have right now?
Well, exactly. I mean, obviously, not that it matters. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Personal opinion can be useful and helpful, but at the end of the day, people shouldn't base their own decisions on what someone else thinks. So I think you're right in that regard.
Yep, absolutely. People can use their own discretion and their own common sense, and everything I said tonight holds true. These are absolute truths. That's all they are. These are just truths I've been pointing out to people. I'm no smarter than anybody else. I just know truth when I see it. And I know bullshit when I see it.
Hmm?
Okay? Nobody can fix this problem for you, because we are the problem. We are a society of ignorant people who spend well beyond our means. And when we do spend all our money, we're financing corporations that are causing every problem on this planet.
Yep. Yep.
So who can fix that but you?
That's right. I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't know who you are. You don't know how to contact the government properly. This is where some of the law stuff comes in. And you don't know how to put them in their place, because you created them. They work for you. You better believe that that is the truth. And they're not worried about you, because you don't even know who you are. You can't hold them accountable because you don't know how. What do they have to fear from?
Okay, Moses, we back. Now, let's go back to reality and let's recap. We in the courtroom. They've called your name. Mark Anderson. Judge, I'm here on special appearance in regards to this matter. I'm making a special appearance. First of all, I'm a bit confused, and I'm going to need help of the court. Because you're in the court. You know, this is a play. You got to act. You know, act. I have a birth certificate right here proving I'm not dead. I don't want to disturb the court. I want to be as brief as I can. But I do have some questions because there's some things that I don't understand. And if you bear with me for a minute, I have a question. Judge, are you acting as a banker or judge this evening? Are you employed by the county, city, or the state? And I need to know who's bringing the charges against me and where the injured party is, and if the prosecutor's prepared to place his license to practice law in the state of Florida on the record, and I'll wait so he can go through his paperwork to get it out. And I have less than 60 seconds right there. Once you learn the rules of the game, you play a game if you learn the rules of the game. I would like to ask if anybody has on your, if you're on your social sites, send a request to for friendship. If you're on Facebook, send a request to Tahaka Amana Elbay. I'll grant that request. We're going to be putting up some new videos. We're going to be putting up some new articles and stuff so that you can master this stuff and actually use this stuff to protect yourself and your family and be a aid and assistance to your family members with this information. Knowledge is power. But if you don't have the knowledge, you have no power. If you don't have knowledge, you don't have any power. So knowledge is power. So you want to get that. I'd like to recommend that you go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And you might want to put your little HTTP and stuff in front of that so you can get over there. And examine that page, you'll see a link that says talkarchives.org. Get those archives. That way you will have access to the artillery and the ammunition to do what you have to do. Okay? Now, we're going to go down into this thing, and I can already see, based on what I got now, we're going to have to come back with part two. With this. So we're going to deal with the most effective stuff that we have to do and try to get as much as I can in. And if we don't get it all in, we're going to come back with part two. I know I got to. Ain't no doubt about it.
Now, first presentation or the first video that we showed you how your trust was set up. So this time we're going to go a little bit further and we're going to show you how people access your trust all the time. And we're going to show you how perhaps you could access your trust and have access to the funds that are in that trust for you. So we're going to look at banking and see how the banks use your trust on a day-by-day basis. This is what you'd normally see. You'd see your trust account written like this, Jane Mary Smith, in all capitals. Because it's a trust, because it's a dead entity, it's written in all capitals, as we discovered in the first presentation. So now, I guess a few of you watching this have already applied for a loan, so some of you will be familiar with this. So the first thing that you're going to do is you're going to fill out a loan application at your local bank. And a few days later, a week later, the bank gives you a call and lets you know that your loan has been approved. Now, typically, they will never put this in writing. And there's a good reason for this, which we'll discover. So you go to the bank and sign the loan agreement. Now, over recent years, I have noticed a trend happening where the loan and the mortgage agreement are all one document. Now, this isn't normal. This hasn't been the case here in New Zealand, but it seems to be more the second-tier lenders that are doing this. But the banks certainly do have two separate things, and that is a loan agreement and a mortgage agreement. Now, the reason that they will never put it in writing that your loan has been approved, because in the mortgage document, you will have the wording, no oral agreements in it. This written agreement is the final expression of the agreement between lender and the borrower and may not be contradicted by evidence of any prior oral agreement or of a contemporaneous oral agreement between the lender and the parties. You will see the significance of this a little bit later. So what exactly did you sign when you signed that loan agreement? It was a promissory note, which is a promise to pay. The loan agreement that you signed is actually a promissory note, or in other words, it is cash. So let's have a look at the Bills of Exchange Act. We'll go to Google, to legislation, and we'll go to the Bills of Exchange Act. Click on the Bills of Exchange Act. And we're going to have a look at a bill of exchange defined. What happens to the note? In Section 20 of the Bills of Exchange Act 1908 allows the bank manager to complete the instrument by endorsing the back of your promissory note and writing, pay to the order of, and they will insert Jane Mary Doe or whatever your all capitals name is there. They will write that on the back of the promissory note. You will also add a 5-cent stamp to comply with the Stamp and Check Duties Act 1971. Now we'll go and have a look at the Check Duties Act, Stamp and Check Duties Act, which will tell us in Section 77 that stamp duty must be paid on every bill of exchange or promissory note. Bill of exchange and promissory note are the same things. And in Section 78, it'll tell you that the stamp is a 5-cent stamp. So unless you have a 5-cent stamp, you haven't paid your check duty, so therefore your bill of exchange is not valid. Okay, so what happens to the note once you've signed it? Now the bank couriers your note together with an off-market securities transfer form to the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. Now this is what an off-market securities transfer form looks like. And on the back of this, and we spoke about power of attorney on the in the first presentation, and on the back of this off-market securities transfer form that you will find a certificate of non-revocation of power of attorney. Now this is what the bank uses to take a power of attorney, and what you will find is that somewhere in the note that you give them power of attorney or you will do certain things. Now what happens to the note at the Reserve Bank is it lodges your note with the Central Securities Depository Limited, which is part of NZ Clear or owned by the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. And there we go. We have a look there. The company overview is the New Zealand Central Securities Depository Limited operates as a custodian trustee. The company was incorporated in 1995 and it is part of the Reserve Bank. The Central Securities Depository Limited either sells your note onto the money markets or Treasury issues a bond to sell on the markets. The Central Securities Depository Limited bundles these notes into big bundles and then the Treasury issues a bond against them. That's what I believe happens. Central Security Depository Limited lodges the off-market securities transfer form against your trust account. Where do they lodge the off-market securities transfer form? Land Information New Zealand. Because they're registering against you, which is the land. Okay, now, once they have lodged that, the bank now has a government-backed security. It's against your trust account. So let's have a recap of what happens. When you go to buy a house, you ask the bank for a loan. You sign the loan agreement. The bank then sends the loan note to the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank lodges the off-market securities transfer form with the Central Securities Depository Limited. Reserve Bank notifies the bank to issue credit. Now, only the banks have got the right to issue credit. So, all of a sudden, the bank has the right to issue that credit to you. But do they? They credit an escrow account with the amount of the loan. They don't put it into your account. Rather strange, I think. But however, the reason the bank's balance sheet will always appear in order to an auditor is because the bank then employs a type of arm's length transaction. And here's how they do it. The loan amount is transferred from the bank's escrow account to your solicitor's trust account. Very sneaky. The money created by your signature is rightfully yours and should have been credited to you. Now, if it has gone to your lawyer, then it looks like it has gone somewhere other than the bank. So, as you're normally buying a house, through your lawyer, it goes into an account, but not into an account for you, because there's another sleight of hand takes place. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand Central Securities Depository Limit has sold your note onto the money market, so your bank needs to pay the buyer of your note their interest. I believe that what happens is that the official cash rate is what the note gets sold out at, and the bank takes the difference between the official cash rate and their own interest rate. Although the loan was approved and your money is already sitting in your lawyer's trust account, your bank now instructs your lawyer to draw up a mortgage agreement. Don't believe me? Go ask. The lawyer then gives you a call and asks you to come in and sign the mortgage agreement. Now, the money is already yours, so why are you going in to sign a mortgage agreement? Doesn't my lawyer work for me, and doesn't he take instructions from me? Maybe. Think again. Why did you have to sign a mortgage, and who instructed them to draw it up? They won't want to give you this information, I can assure you. So why does your bank need the second agreement that your friend, the lawyer, is now entering you into?
bank needs a signed contract from you giving them the authority to legitimately steal your money from you. Now, probably about time that you started looking into things now that you've seen some of this, and have a look at your statements that you get from the bank. Every payment you make is actually credited to an account and held as unclaimed money. Go and have a look on your statements and you'll see this. The interest is debited, but the payments are credited. Isn't it time you started asking your bank manager questions? Questions like, did you advertise that the bank issued loans? Do you hold depositors' funds? Did the bank lend anything of substance? Do you loan legal tender or other depositors' funds? Who holds the original loan agreement that I signed? Why did the loan agreement ask for my will? Did that give you power of attorney? Is my house security for the mortgage? Don't think so. Was the loan note lodged as security with the Central Securities Depository Trust Limited? After you rang and told me that my loan was approved, why did my solicitor call me and ask me to sign a mortgage? Who instructed my lawyer to draw up a mortgage, and why? What security does the bank hold to secure the mortgage? Why do my interest payments get debited but my payments get credited? What bank account are these payments being credited to? Quite interesting, really, because they won't want to answer any one of those questions. Okay, so let's have a little recap here. And so you go to buy a house, you ask the bank for a loan, you sign the loan agreement. The bank sends the loan agreement to the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank puts the note with the Central Securities Depository Limited. Central Securities Depository Limited on-sells that note and lodges the off-market securities transfer form with LINZ, Land Information New Zealand. The Reserve Bank notifies your bank to issue credit. The bank credits your lawyer's trust account, who then draws up a mortgage agreement, and you sign the mortgage agreement. The lawyer now lodges the bank's instruments at LINZ against your title deed. Now, this is another level of deception that is entered here. Most people believe that when you buy a house and get a mortgage to pay for it, and the bank uses their house as security for the loan. Do you believe that? Yeah, well, most people do, unfortunately. So what does the bank use as security? Well, we've already told you that they've used your trust account as security. They wouldn't want more, would they? Governments and banks can only deal in fictions. Now, we know that. We've already learned they created a fictional character to represent us, which is the paper title, or the all capitals name. Now, the Central Securities Depository Limited, by way of an off-market securities transfer form, lodged security interest against this title. Okay, that's the paper title for us. That's the one there that they use. Now, if you have a look at that off-market securities transfer form, you will see number one there, full name of issuer of securities. The person who issued the securities on your behalf was the Crown. Description of the securities will be the all capitals name, your all capitals name. Okay, the Crown created that trust, and now by putting that name in there, they are lodging this against your trust. power of attorney in the Wills Act explains what is held in trust for us and how to access it via your will and power of attorney. All property may be disposed of by will. And if you carefully read your loan agreement, you'll see that you have granted them power of attorney. It says, gives them the right to fill out the off-market securities transfer form and lodge it against your trust. Now, let's have a look at the Wills Act where it says that. All property may be disposed of by will. It shall be lawful for every person to devise, bequeath, or dispose of by his will, executed in manner hereinafter required. Well worth reading Section 3 of the Wills Act. You've already seen how to do that. Go to Google, look up legislation, go to the Wills Act 1837, and then check that out for yourself. Check out Sections 1 and 3, and it will surprise you. We've already discussed how they double dip on your mortgage. Now let's look further. You thought you owned your own land, didn't you? But I'm going to have to ask you to think again here. This is where the next level is of deception comes into it. The New Zealand company has surveyed New Zealand and drawn lines and plans and plots on paper and deposited these bits of paper into a land registry, which is called Land Information New Zealand. And these lots and deposited plan numbers are what the bank issues, or is the title that the bank puts their security against. So what do you own? Piece of paper. Unfortunately. Piece of paper with a title and a description of the records held at LIMS, i.e. lot number and DP number. And on that title deed will say that the bank has an interest. Now, on those title deeds, you can have mortgages, you can hold, you can have liens, you can put register different things against that title. Go check your mortgage document, and you will discover that you're only a tenant. Did I say double dip? Another little twist. Insurance. Your bank will also insist on a registered valuation. Why? They love dipping into the valuer's insurance policy. And this is where you've got to be very, very careful. When the bank sells your house for less than the market value, the registered valuation covers any shortfall. The valuer has insurance to allow for that. So if ever they come back to you asking for you to pay the rest, say, go and get down to the valuer's insurance. I had to pay for that valuation. Now, let's look at what Hallsbury's Laws of England say about mortgage. Consists of two things. It has an insurable interest. And a personal contract for payment of debt. A disposition or charge on the mortgagor's estate or interest as security for the repayment of the debt. Look carefully at number two. The mortgagor's estate. Who is the mortgagor? Is that you? Who is the mortgagor's estate? Yours. That's the all capitals estate. Therefore, if the money came from your estate and the security is held by your estate, who is the mortgagee? You. Isn't it time you started asking your bank manager questions? Questions like, did you advertise that the bank issued loans? Do you hold depositors' funds? Did the bank lend anything of substance? Do you loan legal tender or other depositors' funds? Who holds the original loan agreement that I signed? Why did the loan agreement ask for my will? Did that give you power of attorney? Is my house security for the mortgage? Was the loan note lodged as security with the Central Securities Depository Trust Limited? After you rang and told me that my loan was approved, why did my solicitor call me and ask me to sign a mortgage? Who instructed my lawyer to draw up a mortgage, and why? What security does the bank hold to secure the mortgage? Why do my interest payments get debited but my payments get credited? What bank account are these payments being credited to? Now, if you ask your bank manager any of those questions, particularly if you put them in writing, they're going to run for the hills. Go through every clause of your mortgage and find more questions that you can ask, because I've done this. I've gone through my mortgage document and sent these questions in asking what certain clauses meant. But in my National Bank mortgage, it said clause 7, amount outstanding at signing of this agreement, $0.00. Now, I asked them the question, would you confirm that that at the time of signing this agreement, the balance, this is the mortgage agreement we're talking about, not the loan agreement, at the time of signing was $0.00 and still is $0.00. Well, they then said, your loan agreement, it's up to you. This information, while no means complete, is to help you understand the deception that has been perpetrated on us by the bankers and their paid court jesters. Totally up to you. The choice is yours. If you want to set yourself free from bondage and servitude or continue to struggle from day to day, your choice. If all else fails, ask your bank manager this final question. This is the final nail in the coffin. On the day I received my loan, did your books balance? If the books balanced, did you owe them anything? No. They couldn't have had any money outstanding if their books balanced. And trust me, they would have balanced. Thank you.
Okay, Moses, let's just put that right there in a nutshell for a minute. Okay, let's go back to a previous broadcast. The gold seizure occurred in 1933. There's no money. We got debt notes. We got all the gold confiscated from the people. We issued House Joint Resolution 192. We now officially have the congressional record. Okay, all you got to do is type in to your browser Congressional Records of the Gold Seizure in 1933, House Joint Resolution 192, Congressional Records. We need the Congressional Records, stuff that we can prove. Yes. Now, because what we are doing is we are unraveling a ball of deceit. And we can take this and use it as our tools for defending ourselves against mortgage. Because, see, what happened is when you went to the bank, they tell you they're going to give you a loan, you sign it, boom, house paid for it. But what they had to do, they got to fudangle it in a way to make you think that you still owe for something because you bought this house. And you got to pay for this. Okay? Well, that seems logical. But according to who? If you took all the money, how are we going to pay for anything? Can't. Okay, so what we're going to do now is go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. A lot of what brothers, the gentleman has already spoken of is already there in basic format. The templates is there. The documents are there involving your mortgage and stuff. You know, just contact us. You know, go access that program and that package and do your little donation and when you get that, you will see everything that you need to file and get that done. Because if you are paying it, and this is just how I see it, if you're paying between $6,000, I know some people paying $2,500 a month for a mortgage. They have other investment stuff. And, well, you know, I can afford to do this and all that. But my question is, how can you think that you can afford to pay anything when there is no money? And this is what the people in New York City found out. When the storm hit there, you had people living in $200,000 to $300,000 homes. Boom, they're homeless overnight. You got a tornado hit Oklahoma the other day. Boom, they're homeless overnight. So we have this false facade in our mind that if nothing ain't wrong and everything going good and my chest stuck out and I'm making money, my wife loving me and we happy, we don't have to. I'm the man of the house. I'm paying the bill. I got to pay the mortgage this month. Why don't you turn around and look at it in reality? Honey, boy, everything's going good. I'm finna get robbed this month on the mortgage. I'm also going to show you how I'm getting robbed on the light and water bill. I'm finna show you how we're going to get robbed on the car payments this month. Ain't I'm a man? Amazing. This is amazing to me. Only amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a long time ago is methods and techniques changed, but principles never change. What I'm saying to you is when you get certain things under your belt, these are the things that you can use, and these are the things that you clearly understand and you have in your brain. This is what we can do, because, see, we have a whole lot of information. We've been bombarded with it day in and day out, 24 hours a day. But what percentage of what is being given to us can we actually physically use to change?
Well, if you look at things as more as they really are, you're in a situation where you're forced to be there and has nothing to do with your consent. You got a guy with a robe on, you got a prosecutor, and then there's you. Nothing involves your consent. These are just men forcing you to do something. But they're pretending to be administering justice. Well, these are people with absolutely no voluntary support whatsoever. Right? All taxation is compulsory, so government has no voluntary support. It's a really great question to ask a congressman or someone. Say, given the fact that all taxation is compulsory, do you have any evidence you have any voluntary support whatsoever? Now they're stumped. The only thing, well, who's going to build the roads? People. Next it. You know, that's why yesterday voluntarism is the easiest thing in the world to convert people to. They already are. So an example of this, in looking at the situation where they're just people and not accepting this ridiculous myth that they're honorable, okay, you can ask some very effective questions. They will actually dig the hole for themselves because they have to maintain a presumption of legitimacy. See, if we're in court, you guys are sitting here, if you're not buying with me, if I'm the judge, if you're not buying this crap, you're not going to pay me. So I got to do a good job making this look good, which I think I'm not doing a good job now. I'm failing now. So one of the things that we do when we go in there is to not be confrontational. A lot of the damage control is to get the idea out of our heads and out of our hearts, especially, that we're not here to fight. I call it in the book, Zen in the Art of Litigation, because you do not want to be a combatant. If you're argumentative, you're disagreeing with them, they're just going to disagree with you, and you've committed the cardinal due process sin. You've allowed them to be responsive. Being responsive is their only real obligation there for due process. Don't let them be responsive. So what I present, especially in a new book with an explicit model of this, what I present is an easy-to-learn model based on looking things more as they are. Because I'm sure if you saw a judge walking around here with a robe on and he started screaming contempt, we'd all start laughing at him. All right? It was somebody the other day doing that. It was hilarious. So when we go into court, and you can hear this when I did it with the tax hearing, so I have a contemporary example, a real-life thing, and you can hear how it really, really binds them up. And I don't have to quote the law. I don't even have to know the law, because I don't. Okay? I can't stand up here and quote statutes. It's not my thing. But you don't need to. And this is why what I do is teach people to be their own attorney. They don't have to use lawyers. They don't have to spend $250 to $500 an hour for someone to talk abstractions. And just make a deal. So what we do is we got the situation, we're not making any, and Gina, just let me know when I got 5 minutes left. So what we do when we go in is ask the judge if we're entitled to a fair hearing. And he's got to say, well, yeah, of course. We're Americans. We're fair. Great. Can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interests? Well, no, of course not. Nice. This is a bad spot to be in if you're a judge. So now I ask the judge, because we are, you know, through investigation, which I have a lot more on the website and the archives of the radio show, I'm going to, knowing what we already know, that's all a fiction, and how things work and what they're doing with these words, because it's all a word game, because I just have, so let me just summarize, so you can follow. Am I entitled to a fair hearing or a fair trial? Yes. Can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest? No. And then I say to him, sir, who do you represent here? Now, most of the time, they're smart enough not to answer this question. Occasionally, we get guys where it's going quick, and they stumble on him. So this happened in Keene. You can go to freekeene.com, and you can see John Arnold saying state of New Hampshire. Now, you want to be real professional about this and play the babe in the woods. You got to play stupid. You got to be like them. Sir, I'm not an attorney. I don't understand here. If you represent the state of New Hampshire, you represent the plaintiff, wouldn't that be a conflict of interest? Again, I'm not accusing him of having a conflict of interest. Just asking a question. It's like somebody mentioned earlier, what I used to say all the time is, you're playing Columbo. So it could be one of these things, can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest? No. Okay. Just one more thing, sir. Who do you represent here? And so, this is obvious. He's already told me I can't get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest. He's telling me he represents a party. He's saying it, not me. This is a judge. So like I say at workshops, I'm just a schmuck from Long Island. Who cares about what I have to say about the law? The judge with the robe on is the acknowledged legal expert. He's the one saying he represents the state of New Hampshire. And you, again, you can go online, you can see this, and I have where judges have said that too. So what do you think they do from this point? Is he calm and rational anymore?
No.
5-year-old with a gun, right? He's screaming. So another eyes, rational, professional man, who's asked who he represents, is now in a fit of rage. Why? Because you're coming in and non-violently, non-contradictory, you're not fighting him. All you're doing is you're pointing out his many contradictions. And that's not to say we don't all carry contradictions, but we're not using guns to enforce them. He is. He doesn't deserve. He doesn't deserve any, what's the word here, soft pedaling. It's a very volatile situation here. So a lot of times, we're not worried that they just throw it out. And people will say, that had nothing to do with the merit that Mark presented. It had no merit to it whatsoever. I don't care. I don't care if anyone, you know, who's a critic thinks there's merit to it or not. You can, it speaks for itself. It's not about me. You know, so if you listen or you see some of the trolls, it's always, it's the way it is with liberty. They attack the person. I might be an idiot. What about the information? So what I talk about a lot is about a cause of action and if there has to be a legal injury. And they always come back and say, that's frivolous, it doesn't apply here. A new legal standard, by the way, it doesn't apply here. Feel free to use that. That's
so.
Well, we get that all the time. So when it that doesn't apply here, really? Can you cite that? Is there any basis to that? No, it just doesn't apply. Great. Can I adopt that same legal standard there, tough guy? Okay. Oh, a traffic ticket doesn't apply to me. Oh, a basis? Grounds? No, don't need it in the scorecard. Apparently here you don't need that. So I've spoken about this a bit, and I think it's a very important issue. I did a habeas corpus for Ian Freeman, who's a friend of mine who was put in jail up in Keene, New Hampshire, for standing in front of a car for 45 seconds. So call it obstruction, say he's guilty of sin. Fine. He's given a year in jail. And they suspended all but 90, and he did 60 days. So I filed the habeas corpus. In their zeal to not hear from me, which I can understand is a common feeling here today. But in their deal to not hear from me, because I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer. Don't claim to be, don't want to be, not a lawyer. So to convince the judge not to listen to me and not let me say anything, because when we were in court, I confronted him. I need a point of clarification. So what we're going to do is we're going to play that clip now. This is from the Keene Superior Court. This is an illegal recording, according to Philip Mangione and Tom Arnold and these other guys. So this is an illegal recording of the habeas corpus hearing. It's only about a minute long.
All right. If the parties, counsel, et cetera, can identify themselves for the record, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Webb, appearing for the respondent.
My name is David Crocker.
David who?
Crocker.
Okay, and you're from Keene?
Yes, I am.
All right, and I believe by telephone we have Mark Stevens from Arizona.
Yes, good morning, Mark Stevens. And I want to, if I can get a clarification from Mr. Webb as far as who he's appearing on behalf of.
He's here on behalf of the county Department of Corrections.
Just when I'm reading his paperwork, it says that he's written here, now comes the state of New Hampshire, buying through the office of the Cheshire County Attorney. Is he appearing on behalf of the state of New Hampshire?
Mr. Webb?
Thank you, Your Honor. As I said, I'm appearing on behalf of the respondent. I am.
Okay, just for a point of clarification, because this is an important issue, when he says he's appearing on behalf of the state of New Hampshire, is he talking about the body politic?
All right, let's not start with that, sir. His appearance has been filed as counsel for Rick Van Winkler. Winkler, we will proceed. If you do not feel I'm handling this matter appropriately, you may appeal.
Well, all right.
Thank you.
Sir?
Sir? Do not start with me. Just do not start with me. All right, if the parties, counsel, et cetera, can identify themselves for the record.
Well, right.
Thank you.
Sir?
Sir? Do not start with me. Just do not start with me.
Now, some people may say, why are you making such a big deal about this? Now, this is a man who's a friend of mine, but he hosts Free Talk Live. He's a real guy, just like us. He spent 60 days in jail. To have a legitimate, valid, or legal, constitutional, whatever, conviction against him, they had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt his presence within the state of New Hampshire. Does that sound like a pretty important thing to you?
Yeah.
And you notice how they don't want to challenge, I can't challenge him. But what I don't have here in the clip, because it would bore you to tears, is the rest of the hearing consisted of him challenging me. Nice. So, say Mark can't do this, great. Why, sir, don't, do not start with me. So, I want to finish here. So, in their zeal, they will always give you something to use against them. So, for example, when we have a witness declared incompetent by asking two questions, did you file a valid cause of action against me? Yes, I did. Okay, officer, how many elements in a valid cause of action? Objection! Calls for a legal conclusion. The witness is incompetent to testify. Great. Strike his testimony and the ticket. Thank you. So what they do is they turn around and... deny. So what you do is you don't fight. You turn around and you pick somebody. My Dago friend, you. Come up here and testify on my behalf. Because what happens is the judge freaks out and the prosecutor loses their mind. He can't testify. He's not qualified. Apparently, that's not a requirement of this court. Because you just let the cop do it. So, effective damage control is using what they have spewed forth, the nonsense that they have vomited out of their mouth. Because they put the opinion before the facts, you can always turn it around on them. And that's what we've got here. I can't tell you, I'm almost as excited for this as playing in with the band. Anyone who's familiar with me knows that I talk about there has to be a legal injury because the PR is the government was created to protect and maintain the individual right. So that's the basis of the jurisdiction of the court. Well, Mr. John Webb, after thinking it was frivolous, I will read it verbatim. It will be on the website. First, Mr. Stevens lacks standing to file a motion in this matter. He has suffered no legal injury. And he was nice enough to do the research for me and support it with a New Hampshire Supreme Court case. So what I'm encouraging people in Keene, New Hampshire to do, especially if Mr. Webb is your prosecutor, to file this with their motion to dismiss as an exhibit and use his own stupid motion against him. But that is effective damage control. When we're living a life of freedom and liberty and we're living more free, that's going to anger some people. And eventually there's always a risk involved. So what I try to do is minimize that risk so that we can all participate and do something to help bring about a voluntary society. So part of this comes in where I have my parking ticket traffic study, where if you want to participate, you purposely get a parking ticket, and we will track the results. And we've got participants, many in California already, so don't, if you're in California, maybe not. But we've got participants all over the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and England. So we're really looking forward to this. But it's about damage control, limiting the amount of damage. We want to live free. We don't want to ask for permission, but we're going to invite trouble because they really tend to hate that. And so I appreciate the opportunity to come out here and talk to you. Again, my name is Mark Stevens. It's markstevens.net.
Okay. Well, what's the solution to the mortgage fraud? It's very, very simple. There's documentation whereby you can cancel a mortgage and property taxes at the same time. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. If you are not in foreclosure, however, you have been served with some notices about your mortgage, being late, if you just don't have the money, cancel the contract. It's real, real simple.
Okay, Morris, we're back. We're moving down toward the close of the broadcast, and I really wanted to get in everything, but I just didn't have enough time to get it in. But we will be coming back for part two and do some more stuff. But tomorrow night, we're going to have Urban Geoponics in. Brother Diallo Secure will be in with us tomorrow night, and we'll post the information around the different social sites and what have you so that you can be here. I hope that you have gotten something out of what we have presented here this evening. And keep in mind that there will be more. The audio portions of what you heard here this evening will be added to Tahaga's archives so that you can actually see the documentation that they're putting up there. But for those of you who have your immediate circumstance, you got a problem with the Internal Revenue Service, if you have a problem with your student loan, the child support, if you have a problem with your mortgage company, call me directly, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you in there. I've been your host, Tahaka Amon Elbay, and until next time, you all listen to this broadcast over and over, check your notes and stuff, because we did have you write this stuff down, and we'll be back with you, okay? All right. You all have a good evening.
All struggling in a world gone mad. Some of us can't find our way. No. If I had my way, I'd change it fast. There would be good times every day. Well, I've been thinking, but it's all I got. I got so much love inside. Oh, yes, I do. How some things man could never stop. But I feel better when I try to see. We're here today, so come what may. Life is much too short. Just remember these words I say. Life is for living. Give your love to someone. Someone else does. Times are changing. It's a brand new day. Please don't let my past you fall. No, no, no. Keep on pushing. Come on.
Thank you.